The emergence of H1N1, or swine flu, last year raised concerns around the world of a severe pandemic. In the U.S., health officials planned for the worst. They feared that the number of patients needing artificial breathing support might far exceed the number of hospital ventilators available. So health officials drafted emergency plans that set out which patients would and would not have access to life support. Many of the plans included a chilling directive. Patients who didn't quickly improve could be taken off ventilators, most likely resulting in their deaths. Thankfully, the demand for ventilators during the pandemic did not outpace supply in the U.S., but there was one place where it did. Pune, India, is a large city near Mumbai. Last August, a 14-year-old girl here became India's first fatality from H1N1 flu. Her death triggered widespread panic. More and more patients were falling ill, but most hospitals weren't accepting them. One of the very few places that would take swine flu patients was a state-run hospital called Sassoon General. It was quickly overwhelmed with patients. Rationing seemed inevitable. But one doctor wouldn't accept that. And the way she responded has become something of a local legend. I came to Pune to meet her.
Hello, how are you?
Hi. Come in, please.
Dr. Aarti Kinikar spends long hours at her job. She works as a medical professor and head of pediatrics at Sassoon Hospital. She recalls the month that the first patient died of H1N1. More than 100 seriously ill babies and children with flu symptoms filled the pediatrics ward in intensive care unit.
Children were coming with fever, with coughing, as well as finding it difficult to breathe. And we were not able to cope with this influx.
Sassoon is not one of the sleek new Indian hospitals that attract medical tourists from wealthy countries. It caters mainly to the poor. The intensive care unit for children has 8 beds laid out side by side in an open room with tiled walls. One of the patients who arrived during the H1N1 panic was a 10-month-old boy named Ganesh. His parents requested we only use the family's first names. Ganesh tested positive for swine flu. His mother, Yogini, was terrified. She says she believed that when people get swine flu, they die. In fact, the vast majority of patients recover without medical treatment, but Ganesh was critically ill. He couldn't breathe on his own. He arrived at Sassoon by ambulance from another hospital, and Dr. Kinikar says her pediatrics department already had more patients than it was equipped to handle.
For swine flu, we had only 3 ventilators. And then we had to decide which patients are going to go on that.
Kinikar says if more than one child needed a ventilator and only one was available, the child with the best prognosis was chosen. Children who needed ventilators when none were available were ventilated manually by repeatedly squeezing an oxygen-filled bag connected to a tube in the child's throat. The outlook for them was often grim.
The best drug is oxygen. And if you cannot deliver it in a proper way, you are allowing the baby to be in your hospital but die in front of your eyes.
3 of Dr. Kinikar's patients died without ventilators the first week of the swine flu scare. The oldest was 2.5. Ganesh, the 10-month-old, arrived the following week. He was bluish and his heart was beginning to fail from a lack of oxygen. Ganesh's mother, Yogini, says she cried when she saw him suffering. She believed God was testing her. Yogini says the ICU was full, and it was obvious there was only a small amount of equipment available for the seriously ill patients who kept arriving. There was just one ventilator free. Ganesh was so sick, his chances of survival looked poor at that moment, even with a ventilator. But Dr. Kinikar wanted to try. She put Ganesh on the last ventilator. Some of the other doctors criticized this decision. And soon, 2 more babies arrived who had difficulty breathing. Hospital policy forbids removing children with a poor prognosis from ventilators to make way for others. Dr. Kinikar now found herself in the situation she had dreaded. there were no ventilators available for the two newly arrived children.
And that's how we started thinking, how can we at least give them the oxygen?
Dr. Kinnikar has a history of improvising when expensive medical resources are in short supply. There were times when the number of incubators for premature babies fell short, so she and her colleagues put their tiny patients in styrofoam boxes to keep them warm. Kinnikar has a mantra when she teaches.
God has given you the brain, just use it. Just keep on thinking.
So she thought, was there something she could do for the two babies who had just arrived? Could she improvise a way out of the shortage of ventilators? Kinnikar knew of another method to assist breathing. It's usually used in newborns with premature lungs. The infant breathes out into a nasal tube filled with pressurized air. The pressure helps prevent the lungs' air sacs from collapsing when they're poorly developed, damaged, or filled with fluid.
And that reduces the work of breathing, and that's what we want.
The method is known as bubble CPAP. CPAP stands for Continuous Positive Airway Pressure. The equipment costs around $10,000, but the mechanism is simple. Kinnikar and her colleagues had previously patched together a homemade version of this device using a few dollars' worth of plastic tubing and other supplies readily available at the hospital. It seemed to work well on premature infants, and now Kinnikar wondered if she could use the same makeshift system to support older babies and young children with flu-related pneumonia. If the technique worked, it might decrease the need for ventilators and therefore head off the need for rationing. But a doctor's duty is to first do no harm, and the improvised device lacked important safety features of the commercially available system.
It was like taking a risk, you know. But then it was a decision between not doing anything and allowing the baby to die, as against doing something and maybe keep your fingers crossed and let it work.
Kinnikar began treating the two babies who had arrived after Ganesh. The staff constructed bubble CPAP systems. Tubing carried oxygen to each baby's nose. The infant then exhaled into tubing that was submerged in a bottle of fluid. Like blowing into a straw, the flow of oxygen created bubbles and pressure. The deeper the tube, the higher the pressure. When Ganesh showed signs of improvement on the ventilator, Kinnikar decided to see if she could wean him off the machine early and instead support his breathing too with the improvised bubble CPAP system. The tubing was connected to Ganesh's nose. His mother watched warily. She says she asked what this thing was and was told it was bubble treatment. Slowly, Ganesh improved. Yogini says when Ganesh started breastfeeding and smiling, she knew he would recover and that she had passed God's test of faith. Dr. Kinnikar's simple device had also passed its test.
Mommy.
A year later, Ganesh is a chubby, active child. The two other babies treated in those early days of the pandemic also improved with bubble CPAP and never needed to be put on a ventilator. Over the course of the pandemic, hundreds of children were treated with bubble CPAP at Sassoon, and the improvised device is still heavily used in the pediatric ICU. The doctors found it has benefits for children, even outside of an emergency. On a recent day, a 9-month-old boy with large brown eyes lay on a bed attached to the homemade breathing system. Oxygen bubbled through a humidifier bottle, then down to the baby, then down to a bottle of saline solution on the floor near the head of his bed, where it bubbled again, creating the positive pressure. The boy had arrived 2 days earlier with rapid labored breathing and a positive H1N1 test result. With help from the makeshift device, he was already doing much better. Dr. Kinnikar says she sometimes thinks of the three children who died in those first days of the H1N1 pandemic and wishes she had improvised sooner. Now she teaches doctors at other hospitals how to use bubble CPAP. She calls her presentation Bubbles of Hope. The improvised system will still need to be tested more rigorously before its effectiveness is proven. But in Dr. Arti Kinnikar's mind, there's no doubt that in the midst of a crisis, creative thinking and supplies that cost around $5 helped reduce the need for machines that cost thousands and helped prevent her from having to choose who lives and who dies.
What I have learned from this is you have to use your creativity. And if you have the basic scientific knowledge, only the basic science, if that is clear, you will be able to do a lot of things with the gadgets which are available.
That may be an important lesson for doctors in the United States as well. Many are fortunate to be able to offer their patients the latest, most expensive technology. A recent study showed that American hospitals have more ventilators per capita than most high-income countries. But in a severe pandemic or other disaster, the number of patients could easily overwhelm the supply, and rationing might look necessary. But Dr. Kinikar's experience points to another possible solution. As she's fond of telling her students, just keep on thinking. For The World, I'm Sherry Fink, Pune, India.